You're confronted.
So they found, or they sought, false witnesses. Verse 60, but they found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses. You see, you're always looking for an excuse so that you can be right in the area that you want to be right in. And one of your favorite excuses is, I couldn't help it. I wanted to do it, but I couldn't help it. Well, since you couldn't help it, you needed someone to help you so that you could help it. So then when the help meet comes and you get exactly what you said you couldn't help, then you say, I couldn't help it. But you see, the help couldn't come if you hadn't asked for it. So you were looking for false witnesses. You're looking for someone to tell you, you can't do that. You're looking for someone to tell you, you can't be healed, you can't do this, you can't change. So you're looking for a false witness. But you can't find any. But at the last, it says, came two false witnesses. In other words, all the false witnesses that came first make arguments against the word. And it just doesn't fly. They all try to tell you that what I said isn't true, it doesn't work, and I'm wrong. And that doesn't work. So at the end, you need false witnesses that change what I say. And that's what happens in verse 61. The last two false witnesses said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. We proved conclusively this morning that Jesus didn't say that. See, all the false witnesses before came and said what Jesus had said. They didn't agree with it. They didn't understand it. But at least they said it. So the scribes and the Pharisees, knowing the scripture, said, we'll never hang him on this. God so loved the world. How can we hang him on this? So they needed someone, a friend of Jesus, by the way, someone who comes and talks with him and listens to him, that would twist what he said and go say, this is what he said, when in reality, Jesus didn't say it at all. So what they did, they accused Jesus of threatening to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And what Jesus really said is, if you destroy the temple, this temple, I will raise it in 3 days, speaking of the temple of his body. So it had nothing to do with the building. But they came and they made the accusation. Now Jesus knows what he said. And these people came and made an accusation and said, he said this. He said, I am able to destroy the temple in 3 days and to build it, or to destroy the temple of God and to build it up in 3 days. Now there's a hush, a silence, waiting for Jesus to say, waiting for Jesus to act like a child and start arguing with a couple of known liars who don't have any brains, by the way. Now, why would I want to debate with someone that doesn't know what they're talking about? Namely, you. So what happens? They made this statement and a hush fell over the audience and Jesus didn't say a word. So now these false witnesses were making an accusation against Jesus. Well, Jesus didn't answer them. So in verse 62, and the high priest arose and said unto him, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? Don't ask me, they said it. See what's happening here? The false witness comes and says something that Jesus didn't say, accuses Jesus of it, and then wants Jesus to explain what the liar said. Sound familiar? You take what I say and you twist it, and then you throw it back at me, and you want me to explain that twisted mess that you threw out and put my name on it. The high priest arose and said, answerest thou nothing? Verse 63, Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered, well, who's the high priest talking to? As usual. See, when you make the accusation and you are saying what I said, you really said it. And then you answer what you said and say, well, this is what you meant. And I'm sitting there and saying, does this person realize what they're doing? Now you see, I wouldn't have such a big problem with you arguing with yourself. You argue for and against. My biggest problem is even when you have both sides of the issue, you still lose. That would be like going to court and you're the lawyer for the defense and you're the lawyer for the prosecution and you still lose. Now how can you possibly lose if you're controlling both ends of the argument? Because you're a false witness. That's why. So Jesus didn't answer him, and the high priest answered and said unto him. Now notice, the high priest is answering a question that he asked. Answerest thou nothing? What is this which they witness against thee? Now, the high priest answers himself the following way. I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell me whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. That's no answer to the question he asked. So you see, even when the high priest, when this false witness, when you are talking to you, you don't even listen to you. You see, he asks the question, what is it which these witness against thee? And then he answered it and said, I command you by the living God to tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. Now something happens when you use the name of God. I adjure thee by the living God, which is another way of saying, I command thee by the living God. That Jesus answers. Jesus said unto him, thou hast said, in other words, you said that I'm the Son of God. That's why you want to kill me. You've already decided, you made a deal with Judas already. You've already decided that I am the Son of God, or that I think I'm the Son of God, and you want to kill me. You've been looking for false witnesses all day long. And your decision was to put me to death. For what? For saying that I'm the Son of God. Now, after you've done all of that, now you're asking me if I'm the Son of God? Well, you've been telling these people for all day long now. So what has happened? He says, you already said it. Nevertheless, I say unto thee, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming out in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes. See where it says rent his clothes? It doesn't mean he loaned them to someone for $1.98. That's not what it means. It means he tore his clothes, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? What think ye? They answered and said, he is guilty of death. What? He spoke blasphemy. Well, what did he say? Hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Now, that's blasphemy? No, that's Psalms 110. They wanted to kill him for quoting Psalm 110. See, when you want to kill the truth, any excuse will do. They call blasphemy, the man was quoting scripture, and he said, you're guilty of death. You ought to die for quoting scripture. Well, if that's the truth, that would have been a big crowd on that hill. Yeah. Let's go back and see how this develops. Because you see, now the high priest has what he wants, or what he thinks he wants, false testimony. Someone to accuse you that you said something wrong. Now he wants to start a fight between you and the false witnesses. The high priest arose and said unto him, answerest thou nothing? The word answer means to respond. It means to be answerable or liable, to be a defendant. And Jesus said, no. He didn't even respond to them. You see, the minute you answer a lie or try to answer a lie, you are then admitting that you should be tried by the lie. He said, answerest thou nothing? Are you not a respondent, a defendant? Can't you see what they've accused you of? No. See, you work it out between you liars. The minute I start defending myself against a lie, then I'm into the mess here that they wanted Jesus to get into. Well, if you don't want to defend yourself, then you must be lying. The tapes are right there. I'm not trying to deny what I said. Now, you ask me what I said, and I'll explain it to you again. But you ask me what they said that I said, and you can suck eggs. You ask me to explain what you said I said, and you can suck more eggs. I'm not going to be a defendant. And the reason I'm not going to be a defendant, because in the eyes of God, I am pure and innocent and washed in the blood of Jesus Christ. Why should I go to court with you? And on top of that, to help you argue with yourself. See, and I don't have to argue with you because I know you're going to lose anyway. Because, see, you got an idiot defending and an idiot accusing. You are arguing with you, Dumbo and Jackass. You can't win. You never have won that. You've been arguing with yourself from day one. I don't want to do that. I want to do that. I can't help it if I'm going to do that. Well, I don't know what I'm going to do. See, you haven't won an argument in your whole life. See, I just sit back and take it easy. I do my James Brown routine. I feel good. Do, 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 do. Knew that I would. Do, 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 do. So good. I don't have to worry about it. There's nothing to it. See, you're sitting there arguing. I feel good. Do, 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 do. That's all I have to. I don't care what you think. You, on the other hand, I feel horrible. I knew that I would not. So bad, because I've got me. See, you can't win your own argument, can you? And what you try to do is you try to draw someone, that false witness tries to draw me into the argument. Now, understand something. I told you that you were a child of God. And I told you you didn't have to do that stuff. And you repeated and you agreed and you've called me, you've said amen, and you have said, I'm not going to do that anymore. And then just about the time the temptation comes, it says, well, you said maybe. Well, gosh, it is kind of hard now that you mention it. You start arguing with yourself. When that temptation comes, when that thought comes to make you doubt what you said, I'll tell you what you ought to do. Hold your peace. Don't talk to them things. Because see, what the high priest was saying, answerest thou nothing? Don't you realize you're being accused? You're a defendant. You are liable. The minute you start arguing with those things, you become a respondent. And a respondent means a defendant. It means one who is accused, one who is accused of being liable for something. Well, liable means legally bound or obligated to make good any loss that occurs in a transaction. Well, why should you be liable if Jesus already paid for you? Let's assume you were guilty. No, let's not assume. Let's say you're guilty. You're still not a respondent. Because your fine's been paid for. And see, what's happening is the high priest is trying to get Jesus to be a defendant. Defendant means the person sued or the person accused. And Jesus said, I'm not even going to talk to them. This is beneath my dignity. Besides that, Jesus knows that they're going to argue with themselves anyway. And they asked him, says, answerest thou nothing? They've said some things about you. What is it that these have witnessed against you? Answerest thou nothing? Nothing means no thing. So then they asked him, what is it which these witness against you? Now, what is the word that's used in asking about the nature, the class, the name or the purpose of something? Now, if they said it about Jesus, why are they asking Jesus to explain the nature, the class, the name, or the purpose of what they said? See, the minute you lend your name to it as a child of God, you lend dignity to a bunch of stupidity. So I said, what is it? You tell me. They're the one that said it. What also means something that is used in asking for an explanation or repetition of something previously said. Well, why would they ask Jesus for an explanation or a repetition of what was previously said when he didn't say it? The false witnesses did. Because the false witnesses can't say it the same way two times. That's why. Always you come with your story and say, what happened? Tell me again what happened. Boy, and then it starts slithering and snaking. And it's never the same. And if I ask you three times, you'll give me three renditions. Four times, four renditions. You just don't know. So what do you want? You want me to say. You want me to tell you. And then you'll say, well, ask her. She's the one that said it. No, I'm asking you. See, you're asking for an explanation or repetition of something someone else said. In other words, they wanted to make Jesus responsible for something he did not say. He said, what is it that these testify against thee? See, they're asking Jesus to make an explanation to those things that aren't telling the truth in the first place. See, so the false witness comes and says, you can't quit. You don't want to quit. Besides that, it's not your fault that you're doing it. And what you want to do isn't going to work anyway. And you want it too bad. There's no way that you're going to quit. That's what they said. Now here's where you fall into the trap. They said, you can't quit. And you say,
but I'm trying.
Why are you arguing with them? Why are you trying to explain to them? If I said you can quit, because Jesus said you can quit, and you said you can quit, then there's three of us in agreement. Now if they say you can't quit, let them answer it. Let them make their word good. But what happens? You start arguing with yourself. You start responding to the accusation that you made yourself. So see, you're being used to argue with you. And then you try to answer back to you what you accused yourself about in the first place. And after a while, you don't know which side of the coin you're playing. What you need to do is you need to put on a dress on this side. Have you seen those on TV? And then they have makeup on one side and long hair. And then on the other side, they're a man. And a man's dress, a suit on this side, and a woman's dress on this side. You've seen those. I see those all the time. See, what you're doing is you are answering the false witness. And you are trying to explain to the false witness what they accused you of. Now, does that make sense to you? But that's what you do. See, the problem here is that Jesus is not guilty. So he says, ask the accusers to explain their accusations. Well, if Jesus, who was not guilty, never did anything wrong, didn't find it necessary to defend himself against lies, then why should I? As a matter of fact, even if you were telling the truth about me, see, if you were telling the truth about me, I couldn't defend myself against the truth. Wouldn't want to. So if I don't want to defend myself against the truth, why would I defend myself against a lie? But the more important question is, why do you? Why do you defend yourself against a lie? Why is it that you get responsive and you get angry and you get upset when someone says something about you that's untrue? Why is it that you respond to a lie? Why is it that you get upset when you are told a lie? Why is it that you are upset when you are told a lie? Why is it that you are upset when you are told a lie? Why is it that you are upset when you are told a lie? Why is it that you are upset when you are told a lie? Follow my lips. Because you are upset when you are told the truth. Oh. But Henry, they're pop tops. Oh. Finally, the little light goes on. See, how in the world can you ignore? How can you accept and say, that's just a lie? I'm not going to respond to that. To a lie, if when they tell someone tells you the truth, you get upset and emotional and defensive. I'm going to tell you something. If you defend yourself against the truth, you are going to defend yourself against a lie. In other words, anything that comes outside of you, you ain't going for it. So what did Jesus do? He said, I'm not going to argue. If you want to know what these are testifying, you ask them. As a matter of fact, in another place in the Gospels, he said, don't ask me. He says, I was in the temple daily teaching. They all heard what I said. Ask any of them. I know what I said. The only one that has a problem here, the only one that doesn't know what I said is you. Now, I know what I said, and they know what I said. So if you want to know what I said, ask them. Because, see, they weren't interested in what Jesus said, were they? See, if you were interested in what I said, you'd come and listen. You'd call me up. You'd talk about it. No, you're not interested in that. So Jesus said, well, you ask the people that heard me say it then. So you see, the problem here is with this false witness thing. It isn't just that that's the way you treat Jesus, although that's the way it begins. But you see, the way you treat Jesus with this false testimony, these false witnesses, is what happens when the enemy comes to test your word. You said, amen, I'm not going to do that anymore. I want to know the truth. You said it. And then when the false accuser, the false witnesses come, says, you're going to be in trouble if the truth is something that, oh, you're going to be sorry. And then you start arguing with the truth about what the false witness said. Now remember, you would have never been accused of anything if you hadn't asked for the truth. Now remember when you were doing your thing out there by yourself, screwing up your life royally by the numbers, did anybody come to you and said, Jesus sent me to tell you, you better cool it. Jesus sent me to tell you, this is wrong. Nothing. And there are people that were buried today that live their whole lives never hearing one single word from Jesus Christ. Not one. They lived and died and are now in hell because they never asked for any truth. Never. Now, here's your problem, my friend. You came and you asked for truth. And now that you're getting it, you are trying to turn it into a lie. Now, which side of the coin do you think this, you're playing both sides of the issue? See, Jesus isn't accusing you of anything, and neither am I. I'm answering your questions. I cannot help it if you don't like the answer. And incidentally, I've been giving you the same answer ever since you walked through those doors. So if you didn't like it, why do you keep asking the same question? What is wrong with you? You're demented. Yeah. I would have quit answering it a long time. I know you don't like the answer. I know you don't believe the answer. So I have enough sense not to offer it to you. But you keep asking. Like if you didn't know what I was going to say. See, you are not guilty. So why do you have to explain what someone else is accusing you of? Remember something. The burden of proof lies with the accuser. It isn't that you get accused and then you have to prove you're not guilty, although that's the way most of you handle it. An accusation is good. Now, prove to me that you're not guilty. I don't have to prove anything to you. Because even if you could prove me guilty, I don't know it anyhow. So it seems to me like it's a waste of my valuable time. And yours too, because this is precious sleeping time that you're giving up for this. You know, some of you are the most exciting, vigorous, invigorating people I've ever... Your lives, I marvel at the substance of your life. Your happiest part of your day is when you're asleep. You look forward to going to bed at night, and you hate waking up in the morning. And you're peaceful when you're asleep. Now that ought to tell you how exciting you are, my friend. In the day, and incidentally, not only do you sleep all night and that's the only time you're cool, but during the day, all you can think about is sleeping again. You take your 10 o'clock morning break, that's nap time. Right after you eat at noon, you know you can't even eat. And then at night, the minute you come home and stuff your face, you sit in front of the boob tube, and you're gone again. And then from there, you slither from there to the bed, and then you sleep all night. And then in the morning, you arm wrestle 2 out of 3 falls with your alarm clock before it has to beat you up, beat the hell out of you before you get up. And then you sit there in the shower with one eye open. God, you're... Don't you realize that sleep is death? That's the human body cannot approach physical death any closer without dying than when you're asleep. And that's the high part of your day. And it amazes me that sleep becomes such a escape for you. That even when you're confronted with Jesus Christ himself, you start winking at him. Oh, I love the Lord. Yeah, I know. You've been winking at him all. You don't love the Lord. You're sleeping. You say, hi, Lord. I love you. No. You're just ready to fall off. You know, if I had my way, you know what I would do? I would tie a bell around all of your heads right on top. And then you say, ding, ding. Then we'd know who the ding-a-lings were, because see, you can't stay awake. There's no way. See, when you grow up, when you're first born as a child, so how else would you be born? When you're first born, you sleep 12, 15, 16, 18 hours a day. You wake up to eat and doer of the doo-doo, and then you're back to sleep again. And then pretty soon you add to your repertoire. Say, oh, yes, this child is growing. Well, what does this child do? This child sleeps, and this child eats. Well, this child starts developing. Now this child eats, sleeps, and doo-doos. And then pretty soon really gets sophisticated, and this child eats, sleeps, doo-doos, and cries. Okay? Now we have these children, fully grown, supposedly. And what is their day? Sleep, eat, doo-doo, and cry. Doesn't seem to me like you've gone anywhere. What's the problem? False witnesses. You argue with yourself. And this high priest asked Jesus, what is it that these witness against you? But Jesus held his peace. Now look at that phrase in verse 63, held his peace. That's really one word in the Greek. There was no English word that would explain the Greek word. The best they could do is come up with the phrase for the one word, and the phrase is held his peace. Now, this word, this phrase, this word that comes out to the phrase held his peace means involuntary stillness, an inability to speak, hush or to be calm. In other words, we could say, but Jesus was calm. So, how do you hold your peace? Stay calm. See, the thing that's happening is people trying to make you upset. That's when you lose your peace. Now, how do you keep your peace? Stay calm. Well, what does the word calm mean? You have to understand, because you don't know how to do it, because you don't even know what it means. Well, first of all, the word calm means time to rest in the heat of the day. It's where we get the word siesta. So calm means to rest in the heat of the day. Now, in biblical times, people slept from 12 to 2. That was the hottest part of the day. They said, there ain't no sense being out here in the sun, roasting buns. We'll just sleep during this time. So that was called calm time. In some cultures, it evolved to be a siesta. Now, it's evolved not that people rest now because that's the heat of the day. You know why you're sleepy now during that time? Because of what you eat. You ate enough, you ate a cannonball. And it takes all of your energy to digest that abomination you have, so your system shuts down every other non-essential system, and you have no energy because you're digesting that ball of wax you ate. That's why you're always sleepy after you eat. You always can always gauge yourself. When you come home from work and you eat and sit in front of that TV set, if you're dropping off to sleep, you ate wrong. After you take your morning break and you get the initial rush, and then after a while you can hardly keep your eyes open, you ate wrong. But now here we're going off into this. He said Jesus was calm. Calm means lack of agitation or excitement, serenity, present company included. Now, that's what it means. Now, how do you do this? I'm going to show you how to do the word. I'm going to show you how to be calm. The word calm, this is the how. I already told you the what. The word calm means a condition in which the air movement is less than 1 mile per hour. Now listen. In other words, when you have your mouth shut, the air movement is less than 1 mile an hour. When you inhale and exhale, in other words, when you shut up and quit arguing, quit fighting, quit talking, you're calm. So what's the first thing to do when someone starts ranting and raving? Look at them. Stay calm. The minute you open your mouth and say, no. See, listen to this. Less than 1 mile an hour. What's happened? Air is going more than 1 mile an hour now, isn't it? You've lost your calm. See, what this is saying is, see, what did Jesus do? He just said, he just breathed and said, you're the accuser. You're the one that has to make it. You're the one that has to prove. I don't have to do it. So what does this basically say? Keep the air movement down to 1 mile an hour or less. And you will never, ever be drawn into a stupid argument again. And let me tell you what's good about keeping the air to 1 mile or less. It keeps your mind calm. Keeps you rational. It makes you perceptive. You can see what's happening. You can hear every word. So you are gathering information while this poor fool is gushing out his bowels like Judas. And really what they do is they give you all the ammunition that you need to hang them. So what do you really have to do? Just shut up and listen. But the minute someone starts, well, I think you did. No, well, you don't know. And you start right away defending. Thou fool, shut up, listen. They're going to tell you what's wrong with them. They're going to tell you how they came to that wrong conclusion. They're going to tell you how to argue effectively against them. They're going to tell you how to get back at them and destroy them and shut them up. And then they're going to give you the information, the ammunition that you need to do it with. They'll practically hold the gun for you. But understand what's happening here. Jesus said, if you would shut up and let the false witness talk, and you hold your peace, be calm. You say, Jesus, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? If you'd shut up long enough and listen, they're going to tell you what to do. See, the Lord is not going to leave you without protection. Those individuals that are accusing, you can't do that. You know you're going to take those drugs. You know you're going to sing it on. Go ahead. I'm not arguing with you. And then at the end, they have to agree with the word. And they say, well, you know, it's after all. And before you know it, you've won. But what happens? The minute you start hearing even one word that even looks like they're going to accuse you, and immediately you go on the defensive, lose your calm, and here comes the air, more than 1 mile an hour. And then the other individual can hardly wait, and they're waiting, and the air is coming out of you, but you only have so much air. And then the minute you go, and you take a deep breath just to start again, they'll jump in, and then they give you their air. And then you're not listening to a word. All you're doing is you're waiting for them to take a breath. And they start, and they're squeezing out everything, and they're turning red. I know this sucker has to breathe sooner or later. The minute they start taking a breath, you jump in. So what is it? Nobody's listening to anybody, are they? A couple of fools hollering at each other. I'd like to get you behind me on the way to L.A., and I'll just put sails on top of the van and save gas. Hot air. So what did Jesus say here? Keep the air movement. When you're accused, keep the air movement down to less than 1 mile an hour. Now, I'm going to ask you this. Whatever you can say that requires less than 1 mile an hour of air movement, you're okay. Now, Jesus taught us what it takes. Shut up. Now, he speaks in a minute. But what does he do? After they give all the information that he needs, what did he do? He said, you said it. So now how did Jesus know what they said? Because he kept his calm. Because he didn't have a desire to answer back immediately and get vehement with them. He listened. And as he listened, everything that they accused him of, they had already said, and they had already explained what they were accusing him of. He says, well, you already said it. So then they come up with a different accusation. So Jesus said, be calm. And let me tell you something else. If you keep the air movement to less than 1 mile per hour, even though you want to talk, you will have involuntary stillness. If you keep the air movement to less than 1 mile an hour, you'll have an inability to speak. In other words, you have to take in air faster and put it out faster than normal breathing in order to speak. Now, Jesus didn't say go to sleep, which means listen. Stay calm, stay rational, keep the air movement down to less than 1 mile an hour. Now, what happens when you start getting upset? Your heart rate increases. Your respiration increases. And the reason your respiration increases, because if your heart rate goes up, you're pumping the blood faster than normal to the heart or to the brain, through the heart and to the brain. Now, the faster the blood comes through there, the more oxygen you need, because if it comes through normally, your normal breathing oxygenates the blood and it gets to the brain with the proper amount of oxygen. But if your heart, so you don't have to get upset openly or overtly. All you have to do is get emotional inside and have your heart start going faster. Now the blood goes through faster. Now the heart cannot let the blood through there without the proper amount of oxygen. So your brain sends a signal to the rest of your system and you start, because you need more air because the blood is flowing faster. And so far you haven't done anything other than get emotional internally, and already your respiration is up. already the oxygen, the demands that you need for oxygen. And it isn't because you're tired or you're moving. It's because the blood is rushing through your system faster now. Why? Because you're upset. You're agitated and you're excited. So the Lord says, be calm. Now, when you come to church, I'm saying, look, I'm going to say some things about you. Be calm. Don't start answering in your mind or start getting excited. Just be calm. And if I'm telling you the truth and you stay calm, you will get it. But you know why you don't get it? Because the minute you hear the accusation coming, and it's true, but I'm not accusing you. I'm accusing that thing in you. Right away, you go on the defense. Heart rate goes up. Everything goes up. You've lost your cool. And the air movement is now more than 1 mile per hour. And as a result, you don't hold your peace. Now, Jesus held his peace, which basically means he didn't talk. And why didn't Jesus talk? Because they were talking. See, you never have an argument if you let the person, if you just wait until you hear, that's period. That means they're done. But see, everybody that I've ever dealt with misses that mark. See, period is called a mark. Now, any time I have seen disagreements between people, especially God's people, it's because they missed the mark. You don't let people finish. You immediately, the minute you start, they start talking, if you don't start talking back to them verbally, you're already fashioning an answer in your mind, and they haven't finished the question yet. So as a result, people do not communicate. You're not on the same wavelength. There's no union. There's no marriage. There's no closeness. There's no intimacy. And there's no union. Why? Because the minute you hear a key word, anything that reminds you of when you used to be accused, when you were told things, the minute you hear that key word, immediately the defense mechanisms go on and you start, well, he doesn't understand now. I'm going to say this. And everything I say after that, you lose. Then when finally in your intimate wisdom, I take a breath and you jump in with an answer, you're answering something I didn't say. And you know what amazes me a lot of times? A lot of times I'll say something and I'll give the answer myself because I'm making a point, but you haven't listened. And then you try to give me an answer and I said, didn't you hear what I said? And you said, well, yeah, you said, no, I didn't say that either. Well, I thought you said, well, who said it? You did. But you said, well, I didn't talk. No, but you said it. Because you always check yourself out. The minute you feel attacked, you will start thinking an answer, a response, a rebuttal, an excuse. And then everything from that point on, everything I say, you lose. Now, if I play the same stupid game, the minute you start talking and I start thinking of an answer to you, then we're in the same room, but we might as well be on different planets. And why is it that you think people cannot resolve conflicts between themselves? For the simple reason that they don't hold their peace. You see, then you make up your mind, you're right, and argument, every point that's been made that shows you clearly that you're wrong, you haven't heard it. So then the other person does the same thing. Now, why is it? The only way to solve that problem is to give them both a gun. Because they're never going to resolve it. Never. So they'll need a third party, an objective third party that listens. Now, the Lord would like that to be the pastor, me. But it doesn't have to be. She can get her lawyer, you can get yours, and then everybody tries to convince the judge, who will wear a black suit, by the way, black robes. And he'll stand behind one of these things, by the way. And he'll tell you, this is the way it is, my friend. You lose, you get this, we slice the kids in half, you get half the couch, he gets the other half, you get the Which half of the kids you want, top or bottom? Well, she's better at changing diaper. Let her have the bottom half. Why did that happen? Because nobody in that family would hold their peace, that's why. Take it from an expert. I was so smart. Well, I was so intelligent that all she had to do was like that, and I already knew what she was going to say. It was a long time after that I found out she had asthma. I thought she was off. See, that's how ridiculous you get. And nobody's talking to anybody. Everybody's talking, but no one's talking to each other. Why? Because no one holds their peace. I've even seen situations where we're counseling and the person says, well, I thought you were going to get him. I call this session because I thought we had him dead to rights. So you're just waiting there for me to walk in with and take off my clothes from the phone booth and walk in and say, where is this dastardly character? Away with him. I say, no. Let's find out what he did first. Well, I know what he did. Maybe you do. How do you know what he did? Well, and he says, I didn't do that. And I say, well, what did you do? Well, I didn't. You didn't do that, she says. And I said, wait a minute. Let's go through this again. And then as he's starting to tell me what he did, 3 words into the sentence, she'll start arguing. I say, shut up a minute. I'll give you your chance in a minute. Still not listening. She's going 100 miles an hour in her mind. But I'm listening. I'm listening to what this fool is saying. I'm listening. And I'm writing it down, right, mentally. She didn't hear a thing. And then I turn to her and I say, now you tell me your side. And the minute she starts, oh, I didn't. And he starts giving all these signals, intimidating her. I say, don't do that. Tell me. And then finally I get the truth out of both of them. And they tell me what happened. And then all I do is I repeat back. Isn't it amazing? When he said it, you didn't hear it. And when she said it, you didn't hear it. But I heard it all, so I just sit there and I said, this is what happened. She said, oh, well, Brother Reuben, thank you. I didn't see that. You're amazing. I just don't understand. Man, what a mind on this person. All I did is repeat what the woman said. That's all I did. What's so hard about that? But I'll take the credit if you want. But all I swear to God to you, all I do is I listen to her and then I tell you what she said. And something magically happens when I say it. But they're the same words. Well, what is the problem? 2 false witnesses. Defending each other. Defending against one another. A war, a quarrel. And let me tell you, you say, well, why do we do that, brother? I'll tell you why. Why do you listen to me and you don't listen to each other? I'm going to tell you why. Because the spirit in you knows that doesn't matter if you tell me you just robbed First National Bank. I am not going to hold it against you. I am not going to throw it up to you later on. I am not going to accuse you. I'm going to show you how to get out of it. And as far as I'm concerned, it's like you never did it. Now, why would that same woman that tells me that for that reason withhold it from you? Because you use it as a weapon against her later on. That's why she doesn't trust you. And that's why she can't tell you. And incidentally, that's why you don't listen to each other, because whatever you say, she'll use against you. So what happens? Everybody turns everybody off. There's a spirit in you that says if you tell him that, you're going to hear about it later on, again and again and again. And the spirit in him says, don't you dare admit that to her, because she'll use it against you from now on. Every time she doesn't want to be in obedience to you, she'll throw this up to you. She wants this information to kill you. She wants this information to beat you down. And he wants the information to do war with you. But see, then I show up and I say, I love you. I want to see this thing settled. Does it matter to me what you did? I've done worse and I've been forgiven. And then the right spirit in you says, oh, thank God, tell him. He won't use it against you. Go ahead and tell him everything. And you start out little by little, and you're waiting. It's almost like you're waiting for me to jump in and say, what? And I'm just sitting there. I said, is that it? And then you tell me, I says, no, that's not. There's more than that. Well, what do you mean? I just know there's more. In other words, he says, you mean you've heard all this? You're not upset? And there's more? Yeah. Well, why do you want? So you can be free of it. So we can both forget about it. So it'll never bother you again. So see, the very reason that they'll tell me is the reason they won't tell you. Because you want to use it to defend yourself against the person. This individual now says, this is what I think. And you say, oh, you're attacking me. You're trying to correct me. Why? You see, an individual can't correct you unless you're wrong. I'm going to say that again. What are you afraid of being corrected? Unless you're wrong. Now, a person, if you go to school and you take a test and you give the answer to the test and you've given the right answer, you want the teacher to correct the papers because you have the right answer. Who doesn't want the teacher to correct the paper? The one that has the wrong answer. So how can you correct right? Right is already correct. Oh, you're just trying to correct me. Well, if you believe that you were right, you wouldn't be afraid of it. Because you can't correct right. So if you're right, when she tries to correct you, she'll be wrong for trying to correct right. Right? Right. Then you can say, I feel good. And you can do your little step and the whole thing. You don't have to worry about this thing. You're either right or you're not. But you see, you don't even know what she's accusing you. You don't even know what the problem is. Because the minute she starts, you go immediately on the defensive. There's nothing calm about you. And once you get her all upset, and one of you, it's either the husband gets mad very easy, and she says, oh, you're wrong because you got agitated. Listen, do you think it would be very hard to get Attila the Hun in a bad mood?
No.
Well, why do you think you're right just because Attila the Hun's in a bad mood? He's always in a bad mood. That doesn't make you right. You say, well, you're wrong because you're emotional. You're crying. This is a person who's made a living out of crying. She's been crying since he was a little baby for everything. And it always works. So now you think just because she... Listen, the fact that she's crying means she's wrong. Doesn't mean you're right. The fact that he's upset and angry and throwing things up against the wall, which if you're not careful, one of these days might be you. That doesn't mean he's right. Actually, he's wrong for acting that way, but that doesn't make what your position... doesn't make your position right. See, the fact of the matter is, nobody held her peace. I want to say, well, she got emotional. She started crying. I said, well, that no good. And she's always going to say, wait a minute. She showed her emotionalism, and she was wrong. She cried. You're cussing and fighting. Your heart rate is up, and you're emotional too. Oh, but I didn't cry. You don't know what emotional means. You got angry. You got defensive. You got critical. Which is usually the way the man does it. So he says to the woman, you're wrong, you got emotional, you start crying. She says, no, you're wrong, you got emotional, you got mad. You know what? You're both right. Unfortunately, you're both wrong. Well, how can you be wrong and right? You're right about his wrong. And he's right about your wrong. So you're both wrong, but you're both right about each other's wrong. But you're wrong about your own wrong. Because you want to be right about your wrong, and the only right that you're right about is his wrong, and vice versa. Amen. Right? Amen. See, it scares me when you guys follow this. I tried hard to confuse you on this, but man, you're staying right with it. Jesus held his peace, and the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by thy living God, that thou tell us whether thou be the Son of God. Now in verse 64, Jesus answers, Thou hast said, nevertheless I say unto you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Verse 65, then the high priest rent out his clothes for $28 a day, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now you have heard his blasphemy. Well, what did he do? Quoted the scripture. What is it that makes you the maddest to each other? If she cusses and uses every four-letter word, you just throw them back. But if she says, I don't want to fight anymore in the Lord's name, let's call Reuben. Well, you no good hypocrite. You only want to call him when you think you're right. It just makes it worse. Blasphemy, right? That's blasphemy, right? See, and the way, manner of speaking, it is, see. Because when you think you're right, there's only one thing that goes through your mind. 442-7677. But when you're wrong, we don't, aren't you a man? Can't we handle these things ourselves? Oh, I see. Yeah, that's how it works. Blasphemy, right? Well, what it tells me is you knew you were wrong. And it works that way the other way. Well, Brother Reuben, I haven't been around, but I want to set up some counseling. I say, oh, you got her by the throat, huh? I wonder what you got on her now. Oh, yes, Brother Reuben, we must have some counseling. I already know where she was. Well, she's got to do dishes. She's got to go shopping. She's got to do this. Well, I already know what's happening. You're speaking blasphemy. Well, now, why would this dude tear his clothes off? I mean, Chippendale, I mean, why would he do this? Who's he trying to impress? Well, he said, they've spoken blasphemy. I got to take off my clothes now. I fail to find a correlation between the two. Except this. You know, clothes hide a lot of faults. See, and the minute people get upset, they have such a desire to show you what's wrong with them, don't they? So what is anger? Tearing off your clothes, tearing off the covering, because then you'd spit it out. I don't give a damn what you said, I might as well be down the hater guts. Jeez, God, put your clothes on, man. What a difference a day, man. Go to CNR. I don't want to see. What you're doing is you're exposing everything. Why? Because she spoke blasphemy. Well, they accused Jesus of speaking, but he says, we're going to kill you for speaking against God. Blasphemy means to speak evil against and to defame and to degrade. It means to vilify God. Vilify means to use abusive and slanderous language. It said, you're talking about God. You're blasphemous. What did Jesus say? He said, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power. In other words, he quoted Psalm 110. The Lord said unto my Lord, sit thou at my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool. Jesus is quoting David, who is quoting God. This is blasphemy. But I also want you to see what he said, and you don't have to turn there, but in this Psalm 110, he said, sit at my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool. Now, who was God the Father's right-hand man on this earth? Jesus Christ. Who is his right-hand man on this earth now? Or I should say, men. Pastors and husbands. Okay, so what does this say? Sit at my right-hand man. I'm his right hand in this church. You go home, the husband, you're God's right hand. He said, now you sit at my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool. Which means you don't have to fight. Now, if you don't have to fight, then you don't have to defend. And I'm going to tell you something else. Why are you defending if you're not guilty? Because nobody's accusing you. If any of you can say that I've called you up and said you're doing something wrong, you'd be a liar, and you know you're a liar. So you see, if you are the one that raised the issue, and you are the one that's seeking help with that problem, and then once I tell you what the answer is, why am I the one that's accusing you? If you'd have kept your big mouth shut and kept the wind moving at less than 1 mile an hour, I wouldn't be in your face. So what's the problem? I spoke blasphemy in your opinion. I quoted Jesus. I said, nothing shall by any means hurt you. I said, no one suffers there. For every cause, there's an effect. That's what I said. I said, the one who has the symptoms has the disease. That's what I said. I said, the one that has the fruit is the tree. I said, the fruit tells you what kind of tree you are. That's what I said. And you want to accuse me of saying, you want to say that I'm a bad tree because I have bad fruit. I did say that, but I only repeated that. Jesus said, you shall know them by their fruits. But you count me as being guilty of blasphemy because I've quoted the word. Because I've told you, and incidentally, I didn't answer that question until you asked. So what is the answer to this whole thing? What did Jesus say? He says, I'm going to sit at the right hand until God makes my enemies my footstool. So from that moment on, Jesus held his peace. He didn't argue with anybody. He didn't try to defend himself. He could have. He said, I could call legions of angels and wipe your doodle all over the doo-doo-doo-doo. He says, and you have no power over me except the power given you by God. Now, that's a striking statement for this man to make. He said, you have no power over me except the power that's been given to you. Now, understand this now. I don't care if it's cigarettes. I don't care if it's alcohol. I don't care if it's drugs. I don't care what it is. It has no power except that the power that's been given it. Now, that's what Jesus said. Now, did Jesus give power to your cigarettes? No. Did he give power to your alcohol and your drugs and your temper? No. But it has power. Now, who gave it the power? You did. Now, Jesus said, you're not going to make these excuses because it would have no power over you except it had been given. And Jesus said to Pilate, you have no power over me. You're nothing. Only power you have is the power that's been given to you. And Jesus gave him power to crucify him for our sakes. So you see, none of these things have power. It ain't got no body. Now understand, I'm going to go very quickly through this just so that you can understand it. We live in a three-dimensional world. That's why we are three-dimensional. I have a soul and a spirit and a body. And I live in a three-dimensional world. Now, Satan can't hurt me because Satan ain't got no hands. And Satan ain't got no hands because Satan ain't got no arms. And Satan ain't got no arms because Satan ain't got no body. Amen. Understand that. So Satan can't hurt me because he ain't got no body. Now, let's turn it around. God can't help me because he ain't got no hands. Well, why ain't got no hands? Because he ain't got no arms. God is spirit. So how does God bless me? Through people. Because you got hand, you got body. See, so you got to understand that has no body can't hurt you. Now, do your cigarettes have hands? Why not? Because they ain't got no arms. Why ain't they got no arms? Because they ain't got no body. Now, if they ain't got no body, they can't hurt you. They can't have dominion. They have nothing. They're one-dimensional. And that goes for everything. So So the only thing that has power over you is that you give power to. Now, how do you give power to it? You've got to give it a body. Why? Because it ain't got no body. So what do? You have to give it a body. Now, the only body you have to give it is yours. So what do you have to do? You just have to say, those cigarettes can't get to my mouth unless I use my hand attached to my arm, attached to my body, to put in my mouth. And then you say, oh, I can't help this. Yes, you can. I could put a cigarette that close to you, and we could wait for the rest of your life and see if it jumps in your mouth and lights itself. It'll never happen. And does it puff itself? Why? It ain't got no body. See, so without you, nothing happens. All right, if nothing happens without you, then everything that happens, happens because of you. Well, why does it happen because of you? Because it happens to you. So you see, it's perfect justice. If you are using your body, then it has to be used against your body. So if you are the one that's smoking and snorting or whatever you're doing, then it's being done to your body. Well, why can that can only happen if you're using your body against your body? Because it ain't got no body. Now, it would be unjust of God if he would say you could use your body to give body and power to something to be used against me. Then that would make you responsible for my sin. And God would have to judge you for what's wrong with me. And you'd love that. But that's not the way that it works. You have the problem because you have the sin, because you have the effect. And the reason you have it is you don't listen. You start defending right away, and you never hear anything else. And that's why you suffer like these people did. And that's why you consider blasphemy the truth. Because I'll tell you something. You love Jesus so much, you know he's not going to hurt you. So if what I'm telling you isn't true, we know a lie can't hurt you. So if what I'm saying isn't true, why are you worried? And if what I'm saying is true, why are you worried? No matter how bad it sounds, it's going to hurt you. It's going to help you because it's the truth. So you see, you have no reason to want to crucify me. You have no reason to want to bear false witness against me. The fact of the matter is, you are the one who has brought all these things on yourself. Why? Because you talk to the false witnesses. You just simply will not shut up and listen. You'd be amazed what you will learn if you will just shut up for 10 minutes. You'd be amazed what goes on around you. 10 minutes. But most of you walk around in some kind of a fog, and the thing you have to look forward to is your own thoughts, your own opinions, and your own words. And that's why you live the way you do. And Jesus said, the problem is that you want me to explain what you said. And Jesus said, I'll tell you what I said, but I'm not responsible for what you say. And if you can get that straight, you'll get this message straight. From here, we're going to move on just a little bit more. We're getting closer to the hall where they're really going to get serious. Now, they want to crucify this man bad. And the false witnesses are there now, but they still don't have the people's authority. They still have to, they have to give them something in exchange. You want to see, Jesus is a gift. Pilate wanted to give Jesus, as he's yours. He's your king. He belongs to you. We don't want him, but I got to give you something. Well, we'll take Barabbas. I'm going to show you how that works. I'm going to show you how you would rather have Barabbas than the truth. And when I tell you what Barabbas means, you'll know that's you. All you have to do is look at your life. But I get ahead of my story here. False witnesses, keep your mouth shut. Hold your peace. And you will learn that you're married to a pretty neat person. that you, I'm introducing you to your husbands and wives tonight. Go home and say, oh my God. See, what happens if you listen to him for 10 minutes tonight? Try this, ladies. Men, try this. When you get home tonight, shut up for 10 minutes and listen to him. You say, my God, there's a stranger in the house. You won't want to go to bed. You'll want to dress like this. No. It's him, all right. You just didn't know him. If she wears long johns to bed tonight, you'll know that she listened to you for the first time in her life. Says, who is this? And vice versa. I know what I talk about. Brother Don, would you close the service in prayer?